Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. Episode 45, I'm joined by Director of Strategy and Innovation and podcaster, Zara Bryson. Zara completed a Bachelor of Laws at the University of Birmingham, and on graduating was successful in securing a position as a research executive at Ipos Mori, a marketing research heavyweight. She went on to work for The Verve as a senior research executive, then on to Starcom as a research manager before landing at Publicist Media in an associate insight director role. She's progressed within the organisation to her current role, Director of Strategy and Innovation within the PG1 team, which was set up in 2018 by Publicis as a network dedicated to the Procter & Gamble UK media account. In 2018, Zara won the Wacol Future Leaders Award, going on to use the bursary to attend Cass Business School. With a love for radio, a woman after my own heart, Zara volunteered for 5 years as a radio presenter for Harrow Community Radio and Radio Northwick Park. The purpose of Radio Northwick Park is to provide entertainment for patients and those visiting North West London's hospitals through working with staff and those staying on the wards to make the programmes. In 2012, she won the much-revered Jack Petchy Award after she and her colleagues did 33 hours non-stop radio to raise money for the hospital. Earlier this year, she launched her podcast titled Who's Next? It focuses on shining a light on brilliant women and providing inspiration for all. 6 episodes in, she's had some wonderful guests, Lindsay Morgan, Stephanie Matthews, and Jane Evans, to mention a few. Zara is an incredible host, sensitive whilst inquisitive, and with a dash of wry humour. If you haven't had a chance to listen, you can find it on SoundCloud, Spotify, and most podcast platforms. Zara, you're the first guest that also hosts a podcast, so how lovely to welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you so much. And also, you're going to have to come on my podcast too, so it's like a nice exchange.
I'm looking forward to that.
That was great. I mean, I should just have that in audio format and send it instead of a CV. Really handy.
With a nice little Australian accent on the
yeah.
end of it.
Yeah, yeah, NB. Unfortunately, yeah. Won't get such a nice voice from me.
It's not that. It's just I am really conscious all the time that when I end a sentence, it's always like, up.
Oh, yeah. I interviewed a lady called Antoinette Dale Henderson the other day, who's a Gravitas coach, and she was saying that women quite often just generally go up mm-hmm. at the end of their sentences. And if you are trying to kind of command the room and have gravitas, it doesn't have to be all the time, but if there's a point you really want to land, it's really important to go down at the end, apparently. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, I think I pretty much go up all the time.
Well, we could try it now. Yeah. Versus landing and going down at the end of each.
And you did, it's so interesting, you did this, so it's podcast, so obviously we can't see, but you're meant to put your hands downwards as well to kind of, bring it down. So intuitively done it. Very good.
So I'm going to start off with asking you, can you describe the functions of your role as Director of Strategy and Innovation?
So luckily I asked you before if other people had said this was a hard question, because I thought, oh no, question one. Just because it is quite a varied role, and it's only recently had innovation kind of put in it as well. So I think people are very familiar with strategy director, which is quite often what I just refer to myself as a strategy director. The innovation actually was added. It was kind of like a surprise promotion because I quite like to have variation in my role. So just take on lots of different things. So the strategy director part of my role is working across P&G on the media side. So PG1 has media, creative, PR. So I am a media strategist, but working with comms to come up with integrated campaigns. So that's one part of my role. And that's so every year when they get the budgets, we're looking at them, looking at what the cultural trends are, what are the business trends, not just the business trends, but like the consumer trends, so consumption behaviour, and then how we can shape strategies for advertising to kind of fit into that. And I suppose the innovation element is I just do lots of other random bits and bobs. So one of my big drives at the moment is to try and bring kind of creativity and creative ideas to the team. So I'm working on a workshop with our client, because quite often, I'm sure you know all about this, where you might have a great idea and sometimes it gets dropped off because of budget. And we're seeing this as quite like a routine thing that was happening in the past, where great ideas were just being lost, not because the clients didn't like them, but just you have to get the main part of your campaign out, and if there's something that's an add-on, it's easy to cut away, whereas we're trying to kind of embed it more into how they work. So that's one thing. And then we won Campaign Agency Team of the Year for innovation, and so I kind of led that, which was really fun. It was basically just talking to the whole team and working out how we could kind of demonstrate how amazing our team is, because they really are very collaborative and very amazing.
Great. It's
a very long answer for question one.
But you are doing quite a lot. Yeah. So.
But I really like my job. And then some other little things. A book club. So I really like the idea of kind of being democratic with being strategic and creative. Mm-hmm. I think the more you read, the more you encourage other people to read and share, then the better everyone's work's going to get. So yeah, one thing that I'm kind of interested in at the moment. And then,
so how does that function?
I just started a book club. Okay. and then try and choose a variety of books to get people thinking in a slightly different way.
Okay.
So the first one was a behavioural economics one, The Choice Factory by Richard Shotton. It was like very easy to read, very digestible, mm-hmm. behavioural economics. And this one is Talk Like TED, which takes a lot longer than the book actually takes to read, because you end up watching loads of TED Talks.
Okay, cool. I kind of gave a little bit of an overview in the intro, but I'm wondering if you could give me a bit more of a detailed journey of your kind of creative career path up until now.
When I was at school, I'm going way back, but I'll try and be brief. I really liked kind of history and politics and art, but also really liked maths and science. I think there's a feeling that creativity is more the former, so the kind of humanities and art, and they're the creative people, and the maths people are these like nerds who are very logical and kind of Spock-like. And I found it quite hard. It's not hard, but I was sort of a jack of all trades. Like, I quite liked both sides. Mm. And actually leaned quite a lot into maths. Like, I really enjoyed it and found kind of problem solving and stuff really exciting and interesting. And it took me a while to realise that there's creativity in maths as well, and there's creativity in problem solving. So that's kind of where the creativity began. I was always very curious, asking lots of questions, and really had an interest in learning, which is, again, quite nerdy, but there we go. And then when I was going to university, I couldn't decide. I literally could not decide. To be totally honest, I think some of the humanities dropped out because mum was like, you need to decide and think about something that's going to have a job at the end of it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like amazing at art or anything, so that kind of dropped away. And then it was between maths and law. Which are very different.
Yep.
And I ended up choosing law for no particular reason. Part of me thought I was going to change the world, I was going to become a human rights barrister, mm-hmm. it's going to be really this, you know, force for good.
Which are all good reasons.
Yeah, which are great reasons, yeah. So did a mini pupillage at Barrister's Chambers, and it was really...
A mini pupillage.
So that's... It's kind of like work experience, okay. But
sounds way cooler.
Yeah, I'm just doing my mini pupillage. So I did a couple of those. It's kind of where you follow... It's fascinating. Uh-huh. You follow barristers around in their working environments, I would add. that would be against the law. And not the right people to mess with either. So you shadow a barrister in their working day, and you go from case to case, and it's so varied. And so I did that for a couple of different chambers. And one, I loved it, and I thought, I'm going to be a barrister. This is just the best job mm-hmm. in the world. But the areas which I thought I'd be interested in, like human rights law and immigration, it was emotionally toiling going into those cases. And I was like, I actually don't think I'm cut out for that quite, but let's see how we get on. Went off to university, really loved the kind of, it's very creative. I know people say that lawyers are very much the letter of, like literally like the letter of the law and contracts and stuff. But the way you have to think and apply things that have gone before and then be creative about what goes forward, I think is really creative. So what I started to learn and become confident in was that problem solving and applying different disciplines is a creative skill that you can learn and develop. And so finished university and thought, crikey, I'm not going to be a human rights barrister. Weirdly, I loved tax law and company law, and I had a bit of an identity crisis because I thought, this isn't very me, and didn't know what to do. And I went into insights because I was quite curious, quite like to ask questions, but never really wanted to be a researcher. Like, I found the findings interesting, but then I was like, okay, what are we going to do with them? And so that's what led me to strategy and kind of my path up to being a strategy director, is there's a lot of you need to understand people, you need to understand businesses to be able to help them make decisions and make it kind of a plan for them to win. And so through asking a lot of questions, and I actually did find it quite hard to move in strategy, and I don't know if other people who maybe you've spoken to in strategy said this, because there are different camps of people. There's some strategists like, oh, it's gut feel, it's just that, you know, you'll get there one day, but that's just gut feel, you know, you just strategists become strategists. And I was like, well, how am I going to find out how to be one then?
It's all a bit Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, it's like more like Harry Potter, like you get a letter in the post, you are a wizard, you are a strategist. I just ended up working on loads of pitches, working with strategists, and then got a job in strategy.
But whilst you were in that kind of research role?
Yes. Yeah. So, like, lots of different people who work in, like, insights and research work in different ways. But what I hated was that you'd do this interesting bit of research, you'd find out all these fascinating things, and then you wouldn't really have any control on what was done with those fascinating things. And sometimes companies wouldn't do anything with them. They'd be like, oh, that's interesting, that'd be the end. And that, for me, was just not job satisfaction. I wanted to be, like, diving in there and be like, so what are we going to change? What are we going to do differently? And I think it's a lady called Helen Tupper and Sarah Ellis have the Amazing If podcast, another podcast recommendation.
Which is a great podcast.
It's such a great podcast. Yeah. But one of the things that really resonates that they say is about values and understanding your values. And I need like some sort of, like lots of different, I like collaboration. I really like having some sort of achievement or like product or something that I'm like, okay, we've changed this, we've done this. And so that's what led me to strategy.
Oh.
So yeah, that's another meandering answer. We have to cut off a few questions.
This is the place for meandering answers. Yeah. Okay. Who do you work with? Like, who's in your team and how does it fit into the bigger business offering?
As I said, I like to work collaboratively. So some people have a perception of strategy that you kind of ask the strategist and the strategist is in their ivory tower and they go away and do some like very serious thinking and then they produce an idea and then present it to the people and the people implement the idea. And I think probably quite a lot of strategists do work in some variation of that. But I like to work with the data teams and really kind of get under the bonnet and work out kind of what the insights that we're finding out are, working with the planning teams of what they're doing, because they do a lot of campaigns without my input, and then how can we elevate them, make them more creative, make them better, really tap into what's going on culturally at the moment. Then we have kind of a strategy community that is across PR and creative, so kind of working together, because a lot of the consumer or business trends or cultural trends are relevant to what creative we make as well as how we activate it. And also, the closer you work with creative and PR and media, you'll come up with better campaigns. And what I love about PG1 is it is an environment that is kind of like the old service agencies where everything is together. So you can have an idea. Like today, there were a couple of competitions with media owners where you have to come up with creative, but it was media guys saying, okay, how are we going to do this, approaching the creatives? And so I think collaboratively, in short, is the way that I work and with whom, across a lot of people, because I think that's just the best way to get the best work, and being selective. So going to the people who are best at what they do, and not thinking you have to know everything. Like, I don't have to be the expert in everything, but if you know someone who is good at the data element of it or this or that, and pull in their resources and then kind of bring it together and knit it together, I think that's, for me, an effective way to work.
Amazing. So is there a typical day for you?
No. And I love it. Like, I wouldn't want there to be, because my days can vary so much. So, for example, when we were entering the campaign agency team of the year, my day was like running around videoing the team, like creating a presentation, sitting with an editor doing the video. And I loved that. And that was amazing. Today, it was distilling down loads of awards that other brands had won and what we can learn from them for an inspiration session for the team. And then other part of the day was case studies that we'd written, like kind of editing them. So these things probably aren't any of the things I mentioned that were part of my job role, but are things that kind of come along and I'm involved in all kind of as part of my role. Not really a typical day, but I think that's quite important when you're working in strategy to kind of change things up. And there are also different cycles throughout the year of like when the main budget setting happens and when like different initiative planning happens as well. Quite a lot of variety.
So what skills do you need to be a director of strategy and innovation?
I don't know if I'm like qualified to say that, but I'll say something.
You are doing the job.
Yeah, I am doing the job. But I don't know how many of them there are about. So personally, I think curiosity, having an open mind, not just thinking about your personal views, but being open to doing things a bit differently. Maybe that's kind of also leaning towards the more innovation side of things. But I just think generally with strategy, like asking the questions and digging a bit deeper than the kind of top level answer. So curiosity, which isn't really something people usually put on a a job spec, but I think that's quite important.
It's funny because a lot of people would say curiosity is a big skill in their role.
Mm.
It comes up quite a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? But is that because you don't just take something on face value? Like, to be creative is, I suppose, and I'm not saying that I'm creative, but in the creative industries that you're talking to a lot of people, it's looking at things differently or taking a different angle on things. So you have to be a bit curious to find that.
I think that's totally it. I also think it's what keeps creative people fresh. I think if you're no longer curious...
Yeah, that's true.
Then
gets a bit stagnant.
Yeah, you are just kind of stuck in that.
I do.
Lane.
I need things to be changing and to have challenge to feel motivated. Like that's definitely so. Yeah, that's probably why curiosity is on there. And then a desire to problem solve. So this is actually something I do feel quite strongly with strategy, that you shouldn't just be throwing out curious questions, but then also thinking about what the answer is and solving the problem, because you need to come up with a solution that is creating a strategy or at least assisting people with thinking about what that solution might be. So those two, curiosity and problem solving.
So you've also founded and host the wonderful podcast, Who's Next? So
friend of greater than 11%.
Very good friend of greater than 11%. And you focus on shining a light on brilliant women, and it's like to provide inspiration for all, which it does. It's so, I love listening to it. It's so much fun. So can you talk about why you started it and, you know, what you're aiming to do with it and where you're hoping it goes?
Something I've wanted to do for so long. And I, for any listener who's got an idea and you're sat on it because you're thinking, oh, it's not good enough, it's not MVP or whatever. horrible terminology. Oh, I'm cringing.
Do you want to explain what that means?
Oh, yeah, minimum viable product. Yeah. But if you're thinking it's not good enough, just start. And I know everyone says that, and it's... But I'm not saying it's the most perfect podcast in the world, but I love it and it's evolving and growing and I'm learning a lot. So after thinking about it for a long time, I don't know actually what pushed me. I do know. Some very great friends who were just like, do it now. This sounds great, just do it. So apart from having the idea and wanting to do it, so I like supporting other people. Like my mum said, it's like proper throwback, but I at school used to be very diplomatic. I quite like being an agony aunt, like that sort of... I'd love to have an agony aunt column. That would actually be my ideal. I love hearing problems and trying to solve them. Like, love it. Personal problems, business, everything. Bring me your problems. I love it.
I can't wait to come onto your podcast. Yes. I will start storing them up for you.
I just like a therapy session, like problem solving. So I've always really liked that, and I really like support for me is really important, and something which I'm learning more to do now is asking for it back. But what I think is really important is a combination of support being really important to me and collaboration, loving radio and audio and it just being something that I've always been really passionate about, and then I wanted to actively support other women. And I actually am not sold on it always being women, but people who... I just wanted to give active support to, because I think part of our culture should be supporting others, and it's not. There's a lot of competition, especially when it comes to either minorities or women in organisations, where you feel like you have to be, if you're the only one on the board, you've like fought to get there. And there's a really nice articulation, I think Jamila Jamil said, like, not like move over, but like move aside and I'll join you, and that kind of thing. So all of these things kind of came together, and I had this idea, and in the back of my mind as well was this phrase, shine theory, that Anne Friedman and Amina Tuso came up with. So they've got a podcast called Call Your Girlfriend, and that's about you're not less for supporting others. It's actually beneficial for both of you, and that you kind of the importance of collaborating with people rather than competing. And someone else also said, I think it was Megan actually, one of the guests on my podcast, said it was kind of like good for her, not for you. So it, you know, you can be happy for someone else, and if it's not that it makes your situation any less. So I kind of wanted it to be a podcast version of promoting a practice of just being happy for people. And if they're doing something really amazing and you think, oh my goodness, that is out of this world, crazy amazing, think, wow, one, good for her. And two, if you're like a little bit jealous, because we all get jealous, like that is just so natural, think, okay, what can I learn from her? Like flip it from, oh, like oh, she's just so successful. Oh, what am I gonna do? No, that's got nothing to do. Her success has got nothing to do with where you're at. Think, okay, what can I learn? What can I do differently? Maybe I'll do something similar or something. So all of that started the podcast, which is just interviewing these amazing women. And it's fascinating. I'm loving it. Yeah. Absolutely loving it. I'm sure you're loving this.
Oh,
maybe not this pod right now.
I am loving this podcast. I've been looking forward to catching up with you. Oh, I mean, I totally love doing the podcast. And we've talked about this before, but yeah. I did it as a very, I would say, altruistic kind of motive. Like, what can I do to help make a change, to contribute, to do my bit? And I have got so much out of it that I never considered I would. And I've met so many incredible women and been inspired. And
me too. Someone at work said, oh, is this some sort of networking thing? And I said, honestly, I had no level of being like, oh, I'm going to meet these. I don't know why. I was just thinking, be really great just to like showcase these people for other people.
I totally
agree.
It's
so funny, isn't it? Yeah. And then it's just like this amazing added benefit.
Yeah, totally. But what's really struck me with hearing you talk then and thinking about you, you know, studying law and thinking about being a human rights lawyer and your mum talking about you, you know, very at a very young age, being very democratic about how can I help people, and then also wanting to help people solve their problems. Where do you think that comes from?
Because I don't know.
It's very purposeful and very specific in wanting to be able to contribute to other people's success.
I genuinely, like, this is going to sound really rubbish, but I'm, like, interested to hear in other people what their challenges are. I think there are just so many, like, patterns and connections you can make, and we are all human, so there's some nugget or element that will be, like, a connection to some part of you. So someone could have a totally different life experience, but I'm sure if you got down to chatting with them about, like, oh, what a terrible day they've had, like, there would be a human connection. So I am just really interested in human connections generally. And then why I think, like, probably how I was raised. So my mum, she's the sort of person who, like, would pick an old lady up at a bus stop if we were driving along. And a few Christmases we've had, like, a random seat to someone who was, like, just happened to, you know, need a place for Christmas or whatever. So maybe a combination of that and...
Just being open to it.
But also, I just enjoy it. And, like, we can unpack what that means. Why do you enjoy helping other people? But if I was, like, super, super busy, and I think I've said this to someone before, I had so much on my plate, really panicking, like, okay, I've got to get this done. And then someone was like, oh, this has gone wrong. I would find the time to solve that just because I genuinely enjoy it. You know how you find the time for stuff that you enjoy? Like, you try and, like, create a bit of space. And so I just know that's something that motivates me and I enjoy, so I try and script it in.
It's a bit of your maths brain kicking in there.
Yeah,
as well,
maybe
isn't
I know.
It?
It's like, how has she made something which is quite compassionate, quite logical?
Well, it's both. That's the thing.
Bit of the sort of creativity plus maths and logic. I do love maths, and I do think that maths is quite creative, and it's not always taught in a creative way. And I think a lot of people have a confidence blocker. We all have confidence blockers about a lot of different things. And I think maths is a really big one because it's a lot of it is quite logic. So you're building on different elements of it. And if you miss a step, you just fall back down. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people get this real, like, horrific confidence barrier when it comes to things like maths. And they're like, oh my goodness, I can't do it. I can't do maths. Like saying, I can't do politics. I can't do English. Like, actually, to shut off a whole area. And not that I use maths in my day-to-day, really, ever. But I just think it's a shame that that's an area that somehow we haven't, like, managed to unlock people thinking that it's more creative than it is.
I totally think maths is creative. And a pure maths is really creative.
So it literally made up. They make up numbers. This is an invisible like, imaginary number.
I have a very interesting math story.
I want to hear.
Because I keep getting
tempted, by the way, to ask you questions. And I'm like, oh, that's not the format. But so tell me your math story.
So I was notoriously bad at maths, and I went off to high school, which is in Australia, you're 12 turning 13, and we had our first maths test, and there was like something like 7 different forms, so full of like 30 students per form. And outside everyone's door in the forms, they would have the maths results from the best to the worst.
No.
And I was like 7th from the bottom. And that then progressed throughout the year and I didn't improve. So by the time I got to my second year of high school, I literally begged my father to get me a tutor because mm-hmm. I felt like I could do it, but I didn't know why I couldn't mm-hmm. do it. So he agreed to allow me to have a tutor.
I love this story, by the way. I'm just like grinning, listening to it.
He let me have a tutor for 3 months, and if I didn't improve, he was going to stop it. The universe delivered because I got the most amazing tutor. She mm-hmm. was still at university herself, studying maths. Mm-hmm. And first of all, she was like, no bullshit. So when I was like, I don't understand it, she'd be like, nope, you do understand it. Enough of that. Mm-hmm. And within the first 6 weeks, by the next test, I'd moved up to like halfway. Mm-hmm. The tuition continued, mm-hmm. and by the end of the year, I was 3rd from the top. Mm-hmm. And it really taught me.
This is such a heartwarming tale.
Yeah,
but then it's a shame that it took having to have tuition.
That's right.
But amazing that you did.
Yes, but it also taught me that actually you can learn anything if you're taught in the right way.
Definitely. From the age of about 12, I tutored maths.
No.
Yeah, younger, actually.
That's amazing.
Probably about 8 or 9. This uh-huh. is a bit nuts. So my mum, interestingly, taught me maths through food. Mm-hmm. That's how I learned maths mm-hmm. at home. So she would count out grapes and then I'd be allowed to eat them and say how many is mm-hmm. left, and then she'd cut them in half and then how many has it multiplied to and mm-hmm. then cut in quarters. And so I always had it was kind of linked into the reality, whereas I think learning, you know, 1 times 3, 2 times 3, whatever, sometimes you don't realise what mm-hmm. that is. So I loved maths at school, and so I ended up tutoring people actually in my year group when I was like 8 or 9, which is kind of weird. And then I carried on tutoring until not that long ago, just in my spare time, because I believe that with the right kind of help and stuff.
I love that.
We've totally gone off on a tangent of maths.
Yes.
No, will be no surprise to some of my friends.
And your next podcast.
Yeah. My love of maths.
Yeah. So let's get back to your podcast.
Yes.
So tell me what you're enjoying most about Who's Next, because it's relatively new. You're in your 6th episode.
Yes.
It's bi-weekly. So, you know.
Yeah, well done on having a weekly podcast.
Yeah, that was a bit nuts. With hindsight.
What am I enjoying the most? Meeting incredible people. I'm interested in people who are supportive. Mm. So hearing their stories of support when they felt they didn't have support. Interestingly, a theme that I'm seeing emerge is sometimes when you think you don't have support, you're just not asking the right people. Mm. Or you're not asking at all, which I'm sure we've all done. You're like, I'm in the worst, I've got so much on, or whatever. And actually, there's something to be said for knowing who need to ask or kind of pulling people in. So I'm loving meeting these people, hearing their amazing stories. They're all so different. And then seeing these kind of patterns emerge. So when you asked me before, what's kind of the plan with it? I've got a week holiday coming up. And you know, sometimes you just need to get a bit of headspace to think what you want to do with it. But those sorts of themes, I'm thinking maybe like a little write-up from each one, just a little snippet. Like those kind of little nuggets as a bit of a teaser. I'd love to maybe one day do a live one. I don't know. I'd probably find it quite daunting. That was my challenge that I set myself within a year's time, try and do one live one. And then just like I'm learning as I go completely. Like I'm trying to edit it myself. I'm kind of doing everything myself, and I am learning a lot about audio. I'm learning a lot about people and interviewing people and giving people space to speak. Absolutely loving it. And then the other part that I'm loving is people messaging me and saying that they enjoyed it, or it resonated with them, or they found something helpful, or they like, rah, when people say they wrote something down, I'm like, that's so nice. Okay. You know, like took notes or something. So not that it's totally going out into a void, though I did set out with the intention, if no one listens, I'm okay with that, because I want to do it. And if one or two people listen and someone enjoys it, then that's like my main, I had a very, very low bar that I was trying to reach. Whereas now I'm like, actually hearing the lovely things that people are saying, that it's like interesting or empowering or makes them want to change jobs, which is actually something that's been said a couple of times. But that's great, because you should follow your values and you should get support and all that kind of stuff. So I'm absolutely loving it.
I can tell.
Probably like way more enthusiastic about, and maybe also maths. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
Okay. What's one of the biggest challenges you faced in your career?
I would say being stuck or feeling like I was stuck. Mm-hmm. I think you can get into a situation where you're in a role and then you think there's no way out, and then lots of people feel loyal to companies or like you don't have the skill set to move on or whatever. And so I was in a role, so I was actually in like the insights role, but I'd never wanted to be in it. I stayed in it for quite a number of years. But I'd always tried to be like flexing more into the strategy side of things. This had gone on for a while and I just couldn't see a way out and I was really frustrated. And as I said, it's not always the clearest path to get to, especially as in media, there's kind of different routes. So you can go through planning or sometimes through insights, but it's the lesser traveled route, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then going back to my thing that I said earlier about support, maybe I just wasn't asking the right people, because at the time, and I think sometimes if you're asking someone who is on your team, like your director or whatever, is it really in their interest to move you out of their team? Sometimes, no. And so I was finding it was very slow, and like a year had gone by, and for me that like at the time seemed like such a long amount of time, but obviously it's not. And
it can be if you feel stuck.
Yes. Yeah. And I exactly. Yeah. And then I applied to the Future Leaders Award mm-hmm. because for some reason that was a way out yeah. or something. And I applied to it, and I actually, it was a strategy course because I felt that maybe I needed to, I don't know, do more strategy mm-hmm. or something. And then through the course of that, I'd say to anyone, like, top tip is enter professional competitions that are based around like furthering your professional skills mm-hmm. because they always ask you to like evaluate your own skills, and like basically you have to do a lot of self-reflection, but it's so good because you work out what your skills are. It's a bit of a confidence boost because once you start listing things, you're like, I'm actually not too bad. Mm-hmm. And through the process of doing that, I was just like, do you know what, I have to move. This is what I've realized, I absolutely have to move. And then it took saying that out loud to someone, and they were like, oh, you definitely should do that. There's probably this opportunity here. Why don't you approach it in this way, apply for this job, like, so within the company I was mm-hmm. working. And then I was just like, why hadn't I done that before? But because I'd been kind of hammering my head in just in the wrong direction. And then I had this great kind of interview, and my now boss was like, you'd be great, you should definitely do this. And I was like, oh, okay. And then stars aligned, and it was meant to be a year transition, again, another year. I was like, I can't do another year. And then my boss was like, no, she's going to have to move straight away. And then I got the Future Leaders Award, which was just like a nice sort of cherry on the cake, and then did the course. And the course was great at Cass Business School. But actually, it was more, when I did it, I thought, this is just reaffirming that I'm going in the right direction. Mm. It was kind of a tick of, I did it. Learn some things, but other things I was like, I know this, like this is how I approach things.
So I love how you've managed to turn your challenge. You took the problem and made it positive.
I'm quite an optimistic person. Probably like annoyingly so to a lot of people.
So what do you love about being a director of strategy and innovation?
I love that it's varied, as I mentioned before. I like working across disciplines. I really do enjoy that, and that it's creative. And I like that my days are so varied. Like I really enjoy it. Like I spend a lot of time out of work and sometimes going to like events and stuff, like learning. And I think I'm glad that I can then feed it into my job. Mm-hmm. So I read a lot. Mm-hmm. I like watching TED Talks. I like going to exhibitions. Like I like putting things in that then kind of maybe shift the way you think about things. Mm-hmm. So I like that all of that enables me to like do my job.
Okay. And what do you love about being a podcast founder and host?
Everything, apart from editing, which I'm trying to teach myself and it's taking a while. Yeah, there are just elements of it that are not my strengths, but I love basically everything about it. Like even sometimes, like, you know, you think, oh, you wouldn't want to listen back to your voice or whatever. Mm. But then because I genuinely found the interview so interesting, like, and I never thought I'd be like, oh, I might listen back to it in full now. I've like put it out like after a while. Mm. But just I find the people who I'm talking to really interesting. Mm. So a couple of times I've been like, might have a little listen back to that. Luckily, because I'm not talking too much. So yeah, the content of it. And I think this is a really important thing to know about side projects, because if you're not satisfied in your job, and I'm not saying that I wasn't, because actually I'm loving my job at the moment, but a side project can actually give you renewed energy for a job. Mm. Because I'm doing something I love in my spare time, and it is quite a lot of my spare time. And then, but then that energy gets brought into my work. So I think the great thing is that it's not like totally separate because it's got me thinking. So another thing in my sort of slightly varied role, an area that I'm really interested in is diversity and inclusivity. And so it's got me thinking, what can I change in my company? And so that's kind of like my next thing that I want to do more of.
I couldn't agree more. It definitely, like, running the podcast gives me so much energy, so much creative energy, which I need for my job.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and I actually, to be honest, I didn't probably have that much of that before because you obviously have a very creative role, but like I wasn't creating a product and oh my goodness, how do you do it? Because it's like a baby, like people can judge it and dislike it and stuff. Yeah. That, honestly, I sat for like 6 months or something on the first episode because I was like, no one's going to like it, it's going to be awful. And so it's that whole thing. But then once you're producing something and doing something creatively, it makes you want to do more. Now I'm thinking like, oh, maybe there's other creative things I want to do.
Definitely. It feeds that. Okay, so what do you do to fuel your own creativity? So what do you do, where do you go when you're not editing your podcast?
I have to physically move. If I need to concentrate, sometimes I need to move, go into a different environment, go for a walk. But I think you need outside inspiration to then create something from within. And not that I'm creating that much from within. Like, I sound like some sort of plant growing.
You are creating a lot, though. Your job's creative. You're creating the podcast. You keep saying you're not creative. It's quite...
I know. Well, like, because I'm not, like, a creative, I suppose.
Yes, but that's just a term,
isn't it? It's true.
Everyone's creative.
Yeah, that's... I do agree with that. Everyone is creative. Yeah. Everyone can be good at maths and everyone's creative. Yeah. I'm aligned. But what I mean is, I'm not going to a gallery and be like, I'm going to draw something.
I love that you put on this posh persona.
Yeah. Cultured Zara. Yeah. So my dad got me Tate membership and I'm kind of like campaigning for like RA membership as well. It's a bit of a big ask, but anyway. But I love going to exhibitions. I think what I mean by the... It's not like I'm going to look at something and then make a creative output based on that. Mm. However, I think looking at things that are different, learning about where they were when they painted that, drew that, seeing other people's passion, seeing other people's skills, again, I think invigorates you. Uh-huh. So I think it's a really important thing to do. But generally, it's because you need to change things up a bit. And so like having either a change of scenery, a change of what you're being inspired by... Even just doing some exercise, going for a walk, I think really helps.
I agree. Walks are good. Mm. I'm just going to pick up on something that you said before, and when you talked about, I think what you loved, what you did, is you said that when you see creative things, that actually you store it away, that you know that you might be able to bring it out later. Mm. So you are being inspired by creative things.
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, like, not to replicate it, but there's a nugget. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Like... I think quite often I like to think about the mind of an artist or something, like what challenges were they facing? Mm-hmm. So I think I've talked to you about Annie Albers before, but I'm like, they said that she had to do textiles and like, she was like, okay, I'm going to be really badass at textiles and make it a different medium and like develop it and stuff. Like seeing with different people, also this is going to sound really weird, but you can then have a different perspective.
Oh, definitely. And those shows are massive at the Tate.
Yeah.
Like I can't, there's only so much visual stimulus I can take in.
I know, they're really big.
Because then you start basically, I call it basically going creatively and visually blind. Because you're saturated. You know, and you've got your fill, so.
Yeah, then you just have to like go have a cup of tea or a glass of wine or whatever. Come back another time. A
glass of wine's completely expensive. But if you've got a Tate membership, then you can go multiple times.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Can you tell me what advice you give someone considering a career in strategy and innovation?
So be curious in your role and how that can develop and move towards it. Because rather than just thinking it's something other, you can flex your role, I'm sure, and do things that are strategic within your current role. Be curious in what you consume. So there are loads of amazing strategy books out there if you don't like reading. TED Talks, great. Mm-hmm. Start to think about things in different ways. And then... be curious as to whether your organisation might actually have that opportunity for you, because I think a lot of people think, oh, I have to jump ship or I have to do something differently. Mm-hmm. But actually doing it within a company that you're currently working, if that's something you do want to do, just asking some questions, speaking to the strategist there, even if there's not a role, like they'll know that you're interested and then maybe that could be an opportunity in the future.
Lovely advice. Okay, so what have you got coming up in the next few weeks and months?
Yeah, more podcasts. Actually, I'm really excited about one tomorrow is with Nikki Kemp. So very excited to chat to her. I have next week a sort of this big creativity workshop day with our clients. And so I've got no idea how it's going to go. But the idea is, as I mentioned to you before, you know, that whole, if not everyone's bought into a creative idea, it can be easy to drop. Mm-hmm. So we're trialling something where it's kind of like co-creating with our clients across a whole day. So it'd be quite a full-on day, lots of inspiration throughout, like we've got some illustrators there and stuff. And then hopefully at the end of the day, we'll have some great ideas and then go away and kind of work them up. But there's commitment, there's kind of like budget assigned to it. So I'm really excited about like what's going to come out of the day.
That sounds so fun.
Yeah. So that's that. And then keeping on going with who's next, got some really great ones. You know, when you've got them recorded and you're just excited, but they're not like, it's not scheduled to go out. So just got some really lovely interviews. And the great thing about Who's Next is that because everyone nominates someone, I also don't know where that's going to go. Yeah. And it's been really lovely because there's a personal connection to each of the people who nominates them. It's just going in these like amazing different directions. And it's so weird how you can find commonalities, but also just learn things that are completely different. Like I wouldn't have been speaking to a Gravitas coach potentially. Mm. But then through the curiosity of thinking, I'm going to do this podcast. And I think that was one. So some of them are people who have been nominated and others I've just approached people who I think are doing really amazing and supportive things. Actually, one key bit of advice I'd learned, and this is what I'm going to continue doing, is just ask people. If people say no, that's fine. People don't reply, that's fine. But you never know. Someone might say yes, and then you have an amazing kind of conversation. Other people get to hear it, like, great. And so it's same with your job. Like, everyone should just ask for things. You never know where it's going to take you.
Yeah, that's true.
And so yeah, lots of exciting, slightly different things coming up.
Well, I'm so pleased that we finally got to catch up.
Yes.
By the podcast. So before you go, one thing that I always ask everyone before they go, is there a career or role in the creative industries you know little about and you'd like to know more about, potentially get someone in that role on? And also another woman that you would nominate or recommend to come on Greater Than 11%?
A composer. I just think that'd be so...
I would love a composer.
Fascinating.
So...
It's just amazing. It's okay, like, it's like magic. They are creating magic. There's so many different elements. Yeah, yeah, so a composer. Okay. Or someone that did... this is kind of related. Mainly like jingles or soundtracks.
Yep.
I just think that would be really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then the other one I've thought of too, because that's when fine. Does she ever give a short answer? And I'm sure you probably have had some of these, but like a CCO. Mm-hmm. I also, so who's a woman in the creative industry? I would love to hear you on Greater Than 11%. I think you should get someone to interview you. Someone who's more skilled than me, but you should definitely get someone. Because I think it's fascinating how you can be at a very senior level and have commercial kind of... like responsibilities to a business and then still have to drive that culture of creativity and not, because there's that whole thing that bonuses and stuff, they just don't work in creative industries because the kind of carrot, like, everyone wants to get paid, right? But in the way that kind of things that are a bit more logical, like industries that are very logical, and so you just have to do something, and so like, okay, here's some money if you do it quicker, like that can happen, but that's just not how creativity works really. And so how to marry that kind of commercial sense with creativity and keeping that culture in your teams, I'd be fascinated to hear about too. So probably having like you, someone interviewing you is what you should do. Such a suck up answer.
No, it's starting to become a theme.
Yeah, well, you just got to let the people have what they want, quite frankly.
Oh my god, thank you so much for coming in. I've so loved
thank
catching
you.
Up with you, Zara.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Let's go have a glass of wine.
Sounds good. This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray, and James Haverson. Our editors, Daniel Clark and Laura Francis. And to Maria Continenza for designing the beautiful artwork.